Hey, as a business owner, as a leader, where does your accountability and responsibility begin and end? This is a deep question and ties into the ethics of leadership. Coming right up. Hello, I'm Wolf. This is Wolf's Watch. Thanks for joining us. This is 21st Century Television, live and interactive. Join us. Bring your questions because we can talk. We can interact. Put them in your comments as you're watching this. Smash that like button. Subscribe for future videos. We got a lot of content coming. And if you got ideas on what you want to hear or conversations you want to dig deeper into, again, put it in the comments. We watch that. If you're watching this on the replay, we do the same thing. We watch the comments afterwards on the replays. You ask a question, we'll get you an answer. You want to see some other content, bring it to the table. If it's something that we can produce, you know, we'll give it consideration. Not guaranteeing that we'll do it, but we'll take a look at it. So here's the thing. Business leadership ethics. I love what John Maxwell says about that. There's no such thing as business ethics. There's just ethics. And I totally agree with him. You know, what's your experience been with that? There's not, it just is. There's no separate category. Is what are your ethics? What are your ethical guidelines for you as a person? What are your values? Your values will drive that. As a business leader, what are the boundaries of your leadership accountability and responsibility? That's an ethics question. Had an incredible and unexpected conversation with a group of business owners and business leaders recently. And it was a conversation that we didn't intend on having, didn't expect to have, but started because of an excellent question that someone asked, right? Ask powerful questions. It affects the quality of your life. This was about someone that had a solid performer on a team. This business leader is responsible for building a high-performance culture within that team and within the company that he's working with. Yet here's someone who's been with the company for a long time. They're on the team. They are an above average performer, not in the elite ranks of high performance. What do you do with someone like that? How do you reassign them? How do you respond to that? Where do they fit? And what is your responsibility? What is your accountability as a leader in making the decision? So it's something we all wrangled with, and it's a decision that you likely have come across or something close to it. As a business leader, as any leader, there's decisions that are hard, that are hard, I don't want to use that word. There are decisions that require introspection and clarity and solid grounding in your values so that you make a decision you can sleep well with at night, right? Had any of those nights that are hard to sleep or you wake up and it's just turning over in your head? I have. Let me give you an example. Number of years ago, I was working with a company. We were in turnaround mode for the company. We're working to save the company. They had several factors that were putting them into a downward spiral. The company had gone from 1,100 to 300 employees. Think about that. From 1,100 to 300 employees for several decades, they had been a technology leader in their market. Things had changed. Now they were struggling to put even better technology out into the marketplace. That is a tough race in technology, regardless of what the technology is. Regardless of whether you're riding horseback and it's technology related to the bridles, or you are driving a Tesla and it's technology related to electric vehicles, the constant need for upgrading the technology and continually improving it if you're using that as your market strategy advantage, that's a wheel that you need to keep running on. It can be a rat race, and they ran into that. There were new technologies that were coming onto the market that had customers slowing down on their purchasing decisions and taking a look at the new technologies to see if that was going to be viable. Does that by any chance sound familiar to you? Maybe a little bit like today's artificial intelligence tools wave, artificial intelligence applications wave that we're seeing? Just a thought. So let's come back to the story. So this company, you know, they're looking at it, and they're down to 300 people. People are running scared. There's a lot of tension. There is a lot of, you know, boom, boom, people butting heads because they're fighting over responsibilities, over things, making sure they got enough work. even the managers, you know, making sure they get enough work for their team. They don't want to lose more people. A lot of these folks had worked together for a long time, so they knew each other. It was gut-wrenching to have people be, be fired because they just couldn't make payroll if they kept them on. So they kept cutting, you know, had to keep firing people as part as the cash flow kept declining, sales are declining, and a new competitor broke in. They had a major competitor from another related market niche in the same industry that stepped in that really, really, really created a problem. Because now imagine this. Imagine you're making electric scooters and all of a sudden Tesla decides they're going to make electric scooters and compete against you. It was that level of a big competitor moving into their smaller market niche. And we needed to create a high performance culture in the entire company, not just with a team, but in the entire company. And I had a conversation that kept me up at night with a gentleman, solid individual. I liked him, solid as a person. He's a good employee. He was a good part of the team. He had been with the company nearly 20 years. Came in, put a solid performance in every day. Yet his question to me was, look, is there no room for someone that just wants to come in, clock in the morning, arrive on time, do a solid, honest day's work, clock out at quitting time and go home? And the answer in that case, unfortunately, was no. And what do you do with that? You know, how do you honor that person's service to your company? Put yourself in the shoes of having that person on your team as a business owner. How do you honor that person's service to the company? And what kind of culture are you creating in how you deal with that? Because that's the bottom line. People are going to watch. They're going to see how you behave. What are the actions, right? Behavior drives culture. What you allow for behavior, what you encourage for behavior within your company creates the culture in your company. And that was something that I struggled with. You know, how, what do we do? We're run, right? Company's in a death spiral. And in his case, I had to stand there and look him in the eye and say, you know what? Not now, not today, not with what's going on. We're losing a battle that we can't lose because no one will be working if everyone isn't looking for ways to do stuff better. How can we cut costs without being crazy about it, right? You know, we want to cut costs, not hack off an arm or a hand, right? And he was crestfallen. He's just like, I go, you know what? I wish I had a better answer for you, but I'm not going to lie to you. We don't know if we're going to be able to save the company. And better than average isn't good enough right now. Doesn't make you invaluable as a worker. You're a great person to have on a team. Be proud to have you on a team under normal circumstances. But right now, we can't do it. And in the job market, it is going to be tough to make a move to find a new job without having a more, hey, I want to keep getting better every day perspective. Because it's just a shift in things right now. And it was during a technology wave in the early 1990s, like we're seeing right now. I've been through several of those kind of waves. It's what's coming, what's actually working, what's a bunch of hype, how do we actually get value from it? And everybody was saying, oh, you gotta be on social media, you gotta be on social media. And this was within the last 10, 15 years, right? You've probably heard that, you gotta be on social media. Well, how much has social media really benefited your business? It depends on how you used it. And if you leveraged it appropriately, it could be a huge benefit to your business. It also depended on if your market that you're selling to is on the particular social media outlet that you're using or any social media outlet. There are some markets, there are some target customers that you're never going to reach through social media. So if it's the wrong technology for the wrong reason, it's just a waste of time and money. Let's come back to the leadership issue here. You know, standing there looking at this gentleman in the eyes, knowing he had a ways to go to retirement, but he's close enough that he can see it on the horizon. And this is one of those things from his perspective, standing in his shoes, he's looking at maybe that horizon is going to be proved to be too far. It could be a major disruption to all the years of work he'd put in to building a secure retirement for him and his wife and a secure financial future for his family. Kept me up that night. What do you do with decisions like that? How do you deal with an employee affected by change? We're going through that again. There's a big wave of technology rolling out thanks to the AI applications that are hitting the marketplace now. Smart money is saying it's going to be a very different business environment in 24 months, 2 years. It's going to be fast because each technology wave is crested and affected businesses faster and faster. We'll talk about those cycles in a minute. I want to not stretch this out too long. So, you know, there's that aspect when affected by change, but also what kind of culture are you creating and how does that affect the people on your team? Who fits, who doesn't? What do you do when you have a long-term employee that no longer fits with the culture because something else changed outside of their ability to respond? They didn't do anything. They just missed the boat on a change that came in, and it's something that now doesn't align with what they're really good at, with their inherent abilities, with their interests, with their long-term skills base. Doesn't fit with those things that we can't teach and train in the business environment. You know what that is, the perspective on things, the work, how they approach work, how they think about things, what their paradigm is. We can work with them on that some. A lot of times those are things that take way, way too long for us to be able to work through with them. And business, a job, it's not therapy, right? Depending on what the situation is. So how do you deal with those folks? And where does your accountability begin and end with that as a leader? You know, I want to tell another story real quickly, if I may. A project is another turnaround situation with a company. And we had a project department head that was not working with us on the changes that we needed to make. And it was a major blockade. We really needed to make changes in his area in order to get the business operating in a way that would be competitive, because the market, the external market had changed. And this person had been with the company, again, a long time. He'd been with the company 15 years, was very highly regarded by the people that worked for him. He had a lot of relationships. So he's an influencer within the business. And not all that came into play. My counterpart who ran that whole business unit, that operation, we had a long conversation about what do we do with this individual? And it came back again to what's the responsibility from a leadership standpoint? Where does that begin and end as a leader? Where do you think that it begins and end? How would you approach that? We talked about what kind of culture will this create? If this person is fired, what effect will it have? What message are we sending to the rest of the people that work there in terms of, hey, you work here for 15 years. If you disagree with this, you're gone. That's not what we wanted to have. You can't create a high-performance work culture with that type of fear-based response, because they'll fight you. People aren't dumb. They're not going to volunteer to get their job taken away or volunteer to have the sword of Damocles held over their hands, over their heads all the time, or their hands, you know, chop their hands off. So these are ethical issues that as a leader are part of the job. It comes with leadership. And we struggle with that, and we struggle with that, and I will always regret the decision that we made in this case. We kept him. We kept him on team, at the company, moved him to a different department. Here's why I regret that decision. Because when we moved him to another department, he became even more of a problem in behavior, because now he was completely subversive. He was working against what we were doing, trying to block it. He was throwing a monkey, throwing a block in the wheels so the wheels couldn't spin. He was literally trying to undo everything that we were doing. And because he had a lot of influence, he was able to be effective with some of that. And we eventually ended up firing this individual. And the problem was we lost a lot of time. It caused a lot of confusion. It put doubt and fear into the teams that were leading the changes that needed to be made in terms of whether or not they were going to have the support of their colleagues on the long term, as he had spread some misinformation about what the intent and the policy was behind what we were doing. And it cost us some time. when we really didn't have any, because again, it was a crisis mode for the company. Now, the net effect of that was we succeeded in saving the company. We succeeded in keeping 180 people employed that would not have been employed anymore if we weren't successful in that particular case. Yet here was another leadership ethical dilemma that, once again, I don't know about you, but that kept me up at night. And I had a couple of sleepless nights about that twice, because first, what do? We made a joint decision. My counterpart at the client, the two of us, we came to a conclusion, said, look, let's move forward this way. This seems to be the best path that, all things considered, will be in the best interest of the company. We'll send the right message out to the people that work there. Because one of the things we wanted to be clear on was, look, if you worked here for any length of time, especially if you're one of the more senior in terms of length of employment, and you're in good standing and you've been delivering solid performance, we will honor that. And that was part of the conversation that we had. Same kind of conversation I had recently with this group of business leaders that I mentioned at the beginning of this broadcast. Some decisions aren't easy. They should be, should not be easy. I'm sorry. I'd like them to be, but that's not the reality of it. They should not be easy, because it's other people's lives that are being affected in the decisions that you make as a leader. And they require depth of reflection. They require a big picture view of being able to understand what happens after you've made the decision. Who else is affected? What are potential unintended consequences that you can foresee now? How are you going to respond to the unintended consequences that you didn't foresee, couldn't have foreseen, in order to take care of the people that you're leading, make sure you've got their backs, in order to create the culture that you want to have in your company, in order to maintain high performance, and to make it an enjoyable journey for them and for you? These are tough decisions. Now, the second time that I lost sleep over that same scenario with that company was when we had to fire the guy. Because then it was like, you know what? Wasn't good for him. Because it just allowed him to, I talked to him quite some time after this had all happened. And he got the message. He finally saw what he was doing and where he had run off the rails before, after he had been terminated, after he'd been fired from the company. So that was a net positive for him. He wasn't saying thank you, but he was like, wow, and he went through a bunch more negative stuff, if you will, before he got to that conclusion and that realization and began to make some changes personally that allowed him to change that attitude of, we're doing it my way, or I'm going to torpedo, do anything I can to tear down what you're doing. It's either my way or no way. And we lost several months on that. It was also negative for the rest of the team that were affected by him. The people who were caught in the crossfire of the organizational trench warfare, if you will, that he initiated within the company. And this wasn't in a really huge company, big company, 180 people, pretty serious concern. I've worked with companies that have had tens of thousands of people working for them, in you get that kind of trench warfare going on a much bigger scale sometimes. And it's a leadership issue. So let's come back to the conversation recently, maybe want to talk about with you about this today. Where does your responsibility begin and end with that? And the thing is, as a leader, it's on you. Is it totally on you? No. Look, the good news is the other people involved, they have an accountability. The bad news is your responsibility is to do whatever you can and then find some more stuff that you can do beyond that in order to effectively lead them, to influence them, to create the environment that needs to be created for them to succeed, for them to function as a high-performing team, and to achieve the objective that they've got while they are employed at your company. It's also your responsibility to make sure that if they're employed at your company, their values align with your values, that their employment is clearly aligned with part of their life mission, their life goal, and that's something that's very different from 40 years ago. We did not deal with that as openly. There was some, I mean, my first job that I had at Hughes Aircraft in Los Angeles, there was a lot of big picture stuff. I was proud to be part of that organization because they were the best system engineers in the world. They did the most intense technology implementations that you could think of. They did really, as I like to say, did some really crazy shit, man. That is just unbelievable. They owned 85% of the satellites that were flying in orbit at that time. It was a groundbreaking Elon Musk style, if you will, company of its era. Howard Hughes was an Elon Musk type of influencer in his era. Big changes in multiple industries. So to be part of that, that was big. Overall, we didn't really talk about these types of issues, and it's something you need to consider as a leader. And again, the bad news is, and it is your accountability. It falls on your shoulders. The good news is, it falls on your shoulders, which means you get to do something about it. You're in a position of intense influence. Don't carry it as a weight. Carry it with grace as an opportunity. There's two things I want to leave you with, and this was how we wrapped up the meeting that we had, because it was a pretty heavy, intense conversation, and we were sharing some very deeply personal stories that I won't repeat here based on experiences that we had all had as leaders. And here's what I want to leave you with. First, you're not alone in this journey. Sometimes as a leader, it can feel isolating, can feel alone because of those late nights, because of those times you wake up at night and go, oh man, am I doing the right thing here? How am I going to solve this? Who's going to, you know, how do we deal with whatever it may be? Fill in the blank. I've had those nights too. The second thing is, understand that what you do is incredibly important and that you have, at the end of the day, a massively positive influence on your team, their families, the communities that you serve. And think about this, and I'll leave you with this. How many people are on your team? Multiply that times 3. That is a lower end number of how many jobs each job in your company supports. Now, take that number, multiply that times 5. Because each one of those people is represented in that second number, number of people on your team, times 3, that represents the number of people affected by what you're doing with your business. And this is a conservative low estimate. Multiply it times 5 because that represents each family for those people on the team. You figure an average of 5. You have two spouses, at least one child, and at least 2 parents. Right? Or extended family that are around. Today, we've got 5 generations in the workplace. It's common to have 3-4 generations alive within a family. So you're affecting at least 5 family members represented by each one person that's influenced by your business. Look at that number. How big is that number? That may surprise you. So think about that. There's the weight of knowing your decisions affect all of them. But on the other side of that, the flip side of that is know that you're having a positive impact on all those lives. You're doing good work. Keep doing the good work. Thanks for being part of Wolf's Watch. I'm Wolf. I look forward to seeing you on the trail.